Israeli elections with the whole question of the amendment, the law of return, and who was a Jew. I'd like to give, before you move to these problems, there's a plain contemporary problem concerning who was a Jew. And the real, if you want to have the truth, the way I look at it, the real center of the problem is that it's really an American. I think there's a tremendous misunderstanding of it. There's a real problem concerning the definition of who was a Jew and conversion is an American problem. And I will get to that. But before I do so, I think it's important that we have an understanding, a little bit of the background of the whole question of conversion and who was a Jew according to Judaism, according to the classical Jewish worldview. If you have, without this background, if you just approach the question without any background, it's impossible to have any understanding. I feel it's important that we should have a clear understanding of what the Torah says about conversion and what the history has been as far as conversion, and then we can go into the modern question and try and arrive at some kind of a understanding.
Now, if I was to ask
the question, who was an American? How would we answer that question? Who is a French? I must say who is an American, because I happen not to like the French. No, that's not true. An American citizen, by the way. Who is an American citizen? I don't mean who is an American.
The person that lives in America is not necessarily
an
American. Many people
that live. The only way to the question is how do you establish the criteria? You'd have to consult American law. You'd have to consult. Everybody agrees that there's such a thing as an American, right? And that there are certain laws that American society has the right to establish its own criteria to define who is an American. So basically you'd have, I'm not going into all the particulars, basically you'd have someone who's an American by birth. By birth, their parents are American, so they're automatically. Or a person is a process of naturalization. A person is not American by birth, but they can become an American. Now, what do you have to do to become an American? I don't know all the particulars, but any country has a right to establish its own requirements for citizenship, whether it be knowledge of the language. I mean, today you don't have to know anything, but I mean, so theoretically, right, you would say the person is capable of fulfilling the obligations of citizenship. All right, let's put that in the thing. But now, let's ask this. Let's say a person did not go through this process of naturalization, but he feels very strongly, he loves America, and he identifies with America, and he even lives according to the American lifestyle, but he did not go through the process of naturalization. Is he an American? You have to say no, because once you establish, right, a process of naturalization, it doesn't matter. In fact, a person can even fight for this country, a person can die for this country, he's still not an American. Lafayette fought for America, right? And he himself, let's say there was, for whatever reason, it was important for a certain benefit to be a citizen, nobody would say he's a citizen. That thing, it may be ironic, it may be that he's done more for America than American, but the point is he didn't go through the process of naturalization. Now, the question is, if we want to answer the question, who is a Jew, who do we consult? Same thing, there has to be certain criteria. How do we define the criteria which establishes a person as a Jew? Now, there can only be two possible sources. Either it's the Jewish people, right? Either it's the Jewish people, only the Jewish people, or else there's one other source that can answer this question. Not the Jewish people, but Judaism. But Judaism. In other words, the key question over here, see, we're dealing with two entities. We're dealing with something called Judaism, and we're dealing with something called the Jewish people. In a sense, the question is, who created who? Did Judaism create the Jewish people, or did the Jewish people create Judaism? In other words, the question really boils down to is, what is the source and what is the essence of Judaism? Now, if we believe that the essence of Judaism is the Torah, that is to say that God revealed to the Jewish people on Mount Sinai his Torah, his way of life, his system, and that is the book which gives us our way of life and our guidelines, then the answer is not, you can't ask the Jewish people. For example, if I was to ask you, what is Yom Kippur? What are the laws of the Sabbath? What is Kashrut? The Jewish people can't determine this. It's simply you go to the Torah. If the entire Jewish people were to vote to abolish the Sabbath, it would have no validity, because it's not something which is created by the Jewish people. In other words, our entire identity, our, in fact, the Jewish people itself. How did the Jewish people come into existence? The Jewish people came into existence with the creation of God. Just like God created the world, so too did God create the Jewish people. That's what the Torah tells us. The Torah tells us that the Jews were in Egypt, they were slaves, they were redeemed, and then at Mount Sinai, God negotiated with the Jews. They weren't forced to accept the Torah. There was a negotiation. Moses was the intermediary. And God said that if they will accept these laws and these statutes and the Torah system that I've given them, then they'll be my nation. And they went up and back, and the Jews said, everything that God has said, we will accept. So the Jews became a nation only because of their acceptance of the system of the Torah, which God has given to them. That is the entire purpose of the Jewish people. So therefore, the question of who is a Jew is no different than the question of when is the Sabbath, no different than the question of what constitutes kosher, what constitutes non-kosher. It's a question of the will of God. What did God say about this question? You follow what I'm saying? In other words, the answer to the question, you see, if you believe, let me put it to you this way, and please, you'll see the importance of this later on. If you believe that the Torah is not divine, that the Torah is a man-made system, so then therefore, of course, if it was made by man, it can be changed by man. Was made by man, it can be changed by man, right? Anything which is man-made, like America today, can change its definition of who it is. But my feeling is like this. If you believe that the Torah is man-made, and the Jewish people is no different than any other nation, so then I think the whole question is a waste of time. Who cares what is a Jew? To be perfectly honest, if I didn't believe that the Torah is divine, I wouldn't even want to be a Jew, or care to be a Jew. Why be a Jew? Why be different? I'd be a modern person. And I'd associate with people that I felt compatibility with, and there's no need for a Jewish nation. What's the need for a Jewish nation if there is there's no mission, there's no purpose, and upholding a system that was given to us by God? What's so special? Then we can just adapt. What's the purpose of having a state and fighting for a state? That we have to have our own state now, if it's not because we have a unique way of life which was given to us by God. That's my personal feeling. However, on the other hand, if you believe that we are unique in the sense that God has revealed to us His Torah, His way of life, then the question is, who is a Jew? That's a very, very important question. Now, who is a Jew according to the Torah? Who is a Jew according to the Torah? What's the idea of the chosen people? And what is God's attitude towards those who are not, to the Gentile world? When we speak about the Jews as the chosen people, what does that mean? Does that mean that the Jews are superior? Does that mean that God cares more about Jews than Gentiles? This is a very misunderstood concept, the concept of the chosen people. Does anybody have any thoughts on that question? The Torah regards us, we do regard ourselves as being the chosen people, and the Gentiles don't like the idea, they disparage us for regarding ourselves, and yet the idea is a true idea. It says in the Torah that God has chosen us from amongst the nations. And when we come to the Torah, what's the blessing? You are Shabbat Rabbanu. Now everybody here gets called up to the Torah, right? And whatever your level of religious observance, none of you here are liars. If anybody doesn't believe it, what he's saying, then he should not get an aliyah. Say, I don't want an aliyah. Because you say, blessed art thou, Lord our God, King of the earth. Shabbat Rabbanu, Mikol Ha'am, who chose us from all the nations and gave us his Torah. Blessed art thou, God, the giver of the Torah. So you're praising God for choosing us from the nations and giving... Sorry, now I say if a person doesn't believe that, he shouldn't get an aliyah machine. Because if he's saying something which is a lie, he's a lie, he doesn't believe it. So that's why I assume that there's no liars over here, and we all believe it. The level of our observance, by the way, is something, you're still a Jew. Because once you're a Jew, there's no way that you can ever lose that status of being a Jew. But you do believe in the idea of the chosen people. What does that mean? Does that mean that God doesn't care about the rest of the world? Does that mean that the Jews are superior? The Torah itself speaks about this. It's a very misunderstood concept. It doesn't mean that the Jews are superior. There's nothing in the Torah which holds that the Jews are a superior people. I would say that those who live the Jewish life and follow the commandments raise themselves to a higher level. Yes, that's a superior way of life. But not that the people are racially superior. God chose us only because we are the descendants of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, who discovered his way and sought to propagate the correct way of life, and we are the descendants. And God, it was God's will that there should be a nation. But the only way to perpetuate these ideas that are contained in the Torah is through the instrument of a nation. Because individuals die out. You see, there's no other group that was able to maintain a philosophy of life over the course of centuries. It has to be through the mechanism of a nation. So the purpose of the nation of the Jews is to uphold the system. That's why God created the nation. For only one purpose. To be a light unto the nations, because God does care about the rest of the world. God does care about the rest of the world. And it's God's objective that the rest of the world should also have an opportunity to discover the true ideas and to live in accordance with the true ideas. By the way, it is not, according to our view, it is not necessary to speak about the term salvation. That's the Gentile term. But in other words, our view is that not every Gentile, in order to be considered righteous in the eyes of God, has to convert. Because God gave the Torah to the Jewish people, and for the Gentiles, they are obligated to keep the seven Noahide laws. The seven Noahide laws. A Gentile who keeps the seven Noahide laws basically involves belief in monotheism. In other words, the negation of idolatry, the negation of idolatry, and the basic laws against theft, against murder, against even cruelty to animals are included in the seven. And he must keep the basic laws prohibiting incestuous, adulterous relationships, in other words, things like that, things of that sort. These are the basics of the seven. If a Gentile keeps the seven laws, then he is permitted to live in the land of Israel, and we have to treat him with all due respect. You see? He's still a Gentile, though. We can't intermarry. We can't marry a Jew. But he is considered what we call a resident stranger. That's Ger Toshav, a resident stranger. He has rights to live in Israel, and he must be treated with all due respect. But he is still a Gentile, and he has a share in the world to come. Which means, according to the, I'm not going into the Jewish concept of heaven, that's a separate topic. But unlike in Christianity, for example, which says if you don't believe in Jesus, you're not a Christian, then you go to hell, no matter how good a person you are. That's their view, that no matter how righteous you are, if you don't believe in Jesus and you don't get the sacraments, you go to hell. That's not our view at all. In other words, hi, Rich. Our view is that the righteous Gentile does have a share in the world to come. We honor and respect the righteous Gentile because God does not demand that every person in the world should convert to Judaism. The Jewish people were mandated with that task. However, that's the obligation of every Jew, is to keep the Torah. And a Jew that doesn't keep the Torah is remiss. And he's that's why we have synagogues and we have rabbis and we try and get the person by education or whatever it is to get him back to all of them, but he's still a Jew. Even if he sins, he's still considered to be a Jew. Now God, however, did leave the door open for conversion. In other words, the Torah, that's why I want you to know that when I say chosen, it's not a racial phenomenon. In other words, if we're saying that God picked the Jews because they have some special racial characteristics, then you couldn't have conversion. Because how could only people would be, but anybody can become a Jew. There's no racial criteria. And there are black Jews, Chinese, I mean, as far as that is concerned, Judaism is totally unbigoted. There is not one element of bigotry in Judaism. I'm saying the Jewish people. Jewish people, well, let's not confuse again, let's not confuse. Jewish people may be bigoted. Some of them may be bigoted, may not like Schweizers or Spanish or this and that. Whenever they're doing so, that's not those who denigrate other people because of their race or country, you know, of origin or color, is completely against the idea of Judaism. We've never discriminated in terms of conversion on these factors of black, Jewish, and the other side. Now, what is the concept of conversion? What is the idea behind conversion? This is very, very important. The idea of conversion is the very same idea which determines the fact that why God created us to be. In other words, a person can convert for only one reason.
because he wants to be a part of this nation and fulfill its mission. The mission of the nation is to perpetuate the ideas of Judaism, to perfect himself, to elevate himself by keeping the system, and also, you see, every Jew has the obligation. Your obligation is not just for yourself, by the way. The Rambam says, interestingly enough, the Jew goes off into the desert, and he keeps the 613 commandments, and everything, 100%, but he separates himself from the Jewish people. He has nothing to do with the Jewish people. He's just for himself. He does not have a share in the world to come. Because part of your obligation is not just to use Judaism for yourself, but to be a part of the people which perpetuate for the future. So therefore, one can convert. But in conversion, the only motivation that is acceptable is that this person has a genuine desire with no ulterior motivations whatsoever. It is because he has seen that this is the true way of life. He wants to be a people, the people of God, the people of the covenant, and that is, if that is genuine, if that is the case, then the doors of conversion are open to him. And let me make it clear what conversion entails. When a Gentile, if he's acceptable and so forth, I'll go through the procedure in a minute, converts to Judaism, he is simply going through the same process that the Jews went through at Sinai when we became Jews. When did we become Jews? At Sinai. Before Sinai, we weren't Jews. When we were in Egypt, we weren't Jews. Now, in order to become Jews, the Jewish nation itself had to undergo a certain process of conversion. What were the major elements of conversion which determined who was a Jew? The original who was a Jew is us, the original Jews. The first one is whatever God says, it's not that we will listen and we will do. Total, absolute commitment to follow the Word of God. That's the most important condition of all. Aside from that, the Jews had to engage, the males, of course, had to engage in circumcision. Circumcision, that's the sign of the covenant. All right? And the other requirement is immersion in a mikveh. A mikveh is a natural flowing body of water. All right? So those are the factors which were responsible for creating the Jews in the first place. Every convert who comes into the Jewish fold has to undergo the same process that the Jewish nation itself underwent to become Jews in the first place. Now, practically speaking, how do we deal with it with an individual that comes to be converted? Maimonides has stated it very, very clearly. It's a very delicate kind of an approach. In other words, you have to sort of navigate between two extremes. We push them away with the one hand and we draw them close with the other hand. And what does that mean? That means when a person comes to us and says, interested in converting, we ask what the motivation is. Why? Why do you want to convert? Now, if the answer is because of any other motive, they want to marry a Jewish person, for example, or because they admire the Jewish army and they want to be a pilot in the Jewish Air Force, or they want to get a job with a Jewish firm, it'll promote their career, I mean, whatever you may think of, that person is automatically disqualified, cannot go any further, because his motivation is not for the sake of being a Jew. And that is the first thing. When a person, however, says that they want to become a Jew because they see certain qualities in the Jewish people, they see that it's a higher standard of living, they see that, I don't mean by standard of living, I use the wrong term, a higher moral way of life, they admire the morality, the ideas, and so on and so forth, even though they don't know all the laws, then we discourage them a little bit. We say to them, but hold on a second, don't you know that this is a despised people? And that when you become a Jew, you're going to be subjected to hatred, to anti-Semitism, and it's a minority, it's even today, and throughout the ages, these people are persecuted and hated and so forth. Why would you want to? They say, yes, I know that, and in spite of it, I want to be a Jew. Then the Rambam says we accept him. We accept him, but he's not converted yet. So the first stage is the stage of candidacy. In other words, in order to become a candidate for conversion, we have to establish, and the reason why we go about it, the reason why the discouragement, but you can't discourage them too much. It's to simply elicit, to see whether that motivation is genuine or whether it's not. Once we see that it's genuine, he is accepted as a candidate. He's a candidate, but he's not ready yet because he doesn't know what he's getting himself into. And it's not an easy system. Here's a person that was completely free to eat as he pleased on Saturday, do as he pleased, and there's 613 commandments, and every commandment entails many, many, many laws. Now, if we're going to, you can't, what's the next phase? The next phase is study. You can't wait until he studies. I haven't studied as fully, completely as I should, the full 613, very few scholars. I mean, there's 70 tractates of the Talmud. My whole life is a life of study, and I consider myself an ignoramus. I know I scratched the surface. You don't expect a convert to have to be a brilliant scholar before he converts. So the Rambam says, we then inform the person, in general, of the basics, the basic fundamentals of Jewish belief, the belief in the one God, that God is not physical in any way, the laws against idolatry, the major laws. He says some of the major laws, some of the minor laws, the basic principles of Judaism, the idea that the Torah is from God. If a person does not accept this, that the Torah is divine, he can't convert. That the Torah is divine, the written law, the oral law, the nature of the system, who has the right to make the decisions within the system, and so on. If he accepts the basic system, after a sufficient period of study, if the person accepts, he studies, he understands, and he has demonstrated, or she, when I say he or she, it doesn't make any difference. I'm talking about the prospective convert. Then that person is brought before a court, a bezdin. A bezdin consisting of three people. Now, these three people who perform the conversion must themselves be valid authority. That is, people that are themselves completely committed to the maintenance of the Torah. They themselves must be valid authorities who observe, not only have knowledge, but are themselves totally committed to the observance of Torah. And there's a, I've sat on some of these courts myself, and then there's an interview, because it's the final phase. There's a lengthy interview, we review all the steps, and when that court is convinced that this person has the proper motivation, the proper knowledge, and then again, we tell them, because now you're a free person. As far as God is concerned, all you have to do is keep the seven Noahide laws. And you won't be punished if you transgress the Sabbath. You won't be punished if you transgress Yom Kippur, or the kosher laws, and so on and so forth. So you're taking, once you make that change, there's no going back. You're going to bind yourself, and you're going to be judged according to the standard of the 613 commandments. So be sure this is exactly what you want to do. If that person has a general commitment. I was in a case like this myself when I was dealing with an individual who had a pretty high level of commitment. But through the investigation, I was asking him, he had a job on, he had been working on the Sabbath, it was before this conversion. I told him, he knows about the Sabbath, he can't work. And he had it all worked out, that he was not going to be working on the Sabbath, but that he said that the next 4 weeks is covered, but there may be one Sabbath where he may have to work in the next 4 weeks. But right then and there, I had to stop the proceedings. Because in his own mind, he felt that even after conversion, on that one particular Sabbath, if he couldn't get someone to take his place, then he would be able to go to work. That showed a lack of understanding of the nature of the commitment. So the proceedings had to go on and on in the end, he finally understood. It turned out he didn't really understand, and he accepted and he renounced any form. He said he would never work on the Sabbath, even if it meant losing his job. And the person was converted. So, if the Bezdin, if the Bezdin has decided that the person, the nature of his commitment is absolute, And I know this may sound strange to you, because you'll say, but there's many, many born Jews that don't keep the Torah that well, or just come 3 days a year. And it seems that we're much more stringent with the prospective convert than we are with the born Jew. The answer is there's nothing that we could do about that. The born Jew is a Jew by birth. That's his definition, that's his status. He's part of the system that God has set up. No matter how far he strays, he'll always be a Jew. He could be a heretic, but he's a Jew and he can repent. His status has been determined by birth. The other person could be at a higher level by him, but as I said, God set up a system for conversion. That's that we do not bring another person into the fold in order to be a sinner. That is very, very important. The only purpose, and we're not doing him a benefit, by bringing in a person into the fold who is not prepared to keep the commandments, you're not doing him a benefit, you're doing him a harm. Because, as I said, before he became Jewish, he wasn't responsible. God would not punish him for violation. Once you make him Jewish, he's now responsible in the eyes of God, and he's going to be punished for all the transgressions. So why bring in a person? The purpose of bringing in a person into the faith, so to speak, is to strengthen for that person's benefit himself, and to strengthen those who are weak within the fold. There's nothing we can do except education. But you're not going to bring in new people into the fold who themselves are not committed. By doing so, you're going to destroy the whole fold. That's absurd. You don't want to bring in those who are going to destroy the fold. So therefore, the system has been set up. I think it's a rational system. It's very rigorous. It's very rigorous. But the objective of the system is that the only person who will convert is one who is prepared to accept the full responsibilities of being a Jew. If he's not prepared to accept the full responsibilities of being a Jew, then he shouldn't convert. And he doesn't have to convert. And I said he could have a share in the world to come. Then when the Jewish court, has determined that all these conditions have been met, he then has to go through the actual process. And for a male, it entails the conversion. For a female, of course, it doesn't. But for both, it entails the immersion in the mikvah. And when the person comes out of the mikvah, they're like a newborn person, and that person is a Jew, full-fledged Jew, and there's no second-class citizenship entitled to all the rights, benefits, and so on, and so forth. That is the story. That's always been. There's no doubt. What I'm saying, in other words, nobody can disagree with. Because what I've told you is Torah law, it's in the Torah, it's in the Talmud, it's in Maimonides. No one ever questioned it. For 3,500 years, nobody ever questioned that this is the Jewish method of conversion. You may not like it. Now, nobody, the thing is like this, you see, I'm not here to sell it to you and show you, that's not my point. To show you why this is the best way of having a system of conversion. Well, I could tell you, we could discuss that at a different time. I tried to give the rationale, yes. Whether you like it or don't like it, the point of it is no one has ever questioned throughout all of Jewish history that this is the Jewish method of conversion. And not even the Reform haven't questioned this either. They just say, let's do away with it. But nobody ever questioned that this is the Jewish view. If you take a look at the Jewish sources, throughout all the centuries, all the scholars, they all agreed there was no question as to what entails a conversion. Today, I'll stop here briefly. I'm going to go on now to the contemporary problem. I just felt I had to give this background. But if you have a question about it?
Yeah, that's what I want to do.
The contemporary issue? Yeah.
Yeah.
I want to get into that right now.
Conservative, but
yeah. Someone is converted
by a conservative rabbi. Why
isn't it that? Okay. Okay, that's good. I had to make one more point and this would answer the question. Aside, you see, the thing is like this. The person cannot convert himself. In other words, if a person has the commitment, right, 100%, and undergoes circumcision and goes into the mikvah, they can't convert themselves. It can only be done under the auspices of a valid Jewish court. A valid Jewish court consists of three duly ordained rabbis who are in total conformity to Jewish law. Now, there's a great deal of the problem today is there's two kinds of problems. There's problems with the nature of the conversion itself, you see? In other words, when the standards are relaxed and people are accepted for reasons of marriage or because they it's a mixed marriage and they want to raise a child a certain way and so on and so forth, and we're not going by the proper requirements, or the rabbis themselves. In other words, if a rabbi himself is not 100% observant of Jewish law, now by Orthodox, I don't mean conservative. Orthodox simply means total subservience to Jewish law, the divinity of the oral written law, and the divinity of the oral law. Those who have rebelled, who've made changes, unauthorized changes in Jewish law, are not regarded as being valid rabbis, and therefore not regarded as just the whole problem with their marriages. The reason why we do not recognize a conservative conversion or reform conversion is because of the individual themselves. It's not because it may not be the convert. You see, that's why a lot of converts are caught up in a quandary. They themselves don't know this, and they're not being informed. They don't know this, and it's not their fault, and they may be sincere. But since there were, now we're getting to the modern period, the rise of the conservative and reform movements, and the basis, let me just go into that briefly, and I'll bring us up to date. For three and a half thousand years, there was basically no problem. You didn't have this problem of who was a Jew, because all conversion would carry off basically Orthodox. There was very little of, from time to time, there may have been a movement to make changes, but these things didn't last. Yes?
Longer than Hasidim has been around.
Right.
And the
Hasidim
is probably fairly new
compared
to Let's say, basically we're talking in the 19th century when the Jews achieved emancipation, right? And they achieved, basically the barriers were broken down and they achieved their civil rights and so forth and so on. So there arose different movements, right? Reform movement, conservative movement. The basis, of course, they changed, by the way. You wouldn't recognize the original reform would, they would turn over in their grave if they saw what contemporary reform is today. Certain changes, the objective was to modernize Judaism. And by doing so, to eliminate things in the prayers, practices, the kashrus laws, and so on and so forth, which they unilaterally decided were no longer applicable. By doing so, as I said, that was the first breach. If you hold that the Torah is divine, then you must accept the entire Torah. And no group of Jews has any right to abrogate any part of the Torah. What I say to the Reform or to the Conservative is, either you accept the Torah as being divine, in which case we are bound by it to try and understand it. If you can't understand it, that's your failing. If you study hard enough, I've shown in this show many times, many of the things that the Reform have rejected because it didn't appear to make sense to them. If you study it properly, we've seen how these things are very deep philosophical concepts. And I hold that the entire Torah is applicable to any time and place because it comes from God. And that there is no conflict between genuine Orthodox Judaism and the modern world. And I can demonstrate that. But those who don't believe that, those who feel that the Torah is really outmoded, and it has to be, in other words, it's got to be tailor-made to meet the needs of the time. So if today a premarital sex has become fashionable, so then we don't care what Jews, this is the Reform. You go to a Reform rabbi today to speak about premarital sex, he's not going to tell you the view of the Torah, or about homosexuality, or about abortion. If you want to know the Jewish view, then go to the Torah. The Torah is basically against abortion. Except in cases where the mother's life is in jeopardy, the Torah is basically against abortion. The Torah is clearly against homosexuality.
The Torah is clearly against premarital sex. And adultery and so on and so forth. Now you go to a reform rabbi, he's not going to say this. He's going to what he's going to sound like is basically not a Jew, but like any of the contemporary moralists. Well, if there's love, if it's a meaningful relationship, and if it's this, and if it's that. And there are many reform rabbis that you don't even have to, or if you ask a reform rabbi about homosexuality, I am sure that he will not tell you the view of the Torah. According to the Torah, it's a grave, grave sin which carries the death penalty. That's the view of the Torah. Now, I say like this to a reform rabbi. If you feel this way, you're entitled to your view of morality, your view of reality. If you feel that the Torah is outmoded and it's not the absolute truth, which, right, then you have a right to disassociate yourself from it. Just start your own religion. Get away. We have this is, don't tell people that this is Judaism. This is not Judaism. Judaism is very clear about these issues. Judaism, you have the Torah, you have the 613 commandments. Why don't you go up there and say, Judaism is not for me. It's outmoded. It's an ancient primitive system. What are you trying to fool people for? Start it, we'll give it a new name. Start a new name and start a new religion. And I say the same. I say the same with regard to conservative Judaism. They have not gone as far. Conservative Judaism is more bound by Jewish law than Reform. But they also have decided, where they want to abrogate the tailor-made. In other words, that it is not you. They have gone away from the concept of the absolute divinity of the Torah. And they have decided where they have the right to change the kashrus, to give up on kashrus, or to give up on this, to give up that, to make changes on the Sabbath, and so on and so forth. To remove the mechitza from the synagogue, which the mechitza, by the way, is a biblical. It's a biblical commandment that a synagogue must have a mechitza. So by doing away with those things, they have rebelled against the idea of the absolute divinity of Torah. Now, that's all I'm saying. That the criteria for being a judge, and you have no right to be a judge, to be a rabbi, in my opinion, to be a judge on a rabbinical court, to be involved in conversion, unless, of course you have that knowledge, but you must have an absolute commitment to the divinity of the system. If you don't believe the system is divine, then you're saying it's a man-made system. So how can we recognize it? In other words, when that person gets up for an aliyah, and he says that God chose us from the nations and gave us the Torah, he's a liar. He doesn't believe in it. Because if he believed in it, how can he make changes? The whole thing is just a farce. That is why we cannot accept. That's the problem with the conservatives. The conservatives have not gone as far as the reform. Let's see what the reform have done. Until the last 30 years or so, the problem wasn't so terrible. What was the relationship that Orthodox would have to the former conservatives? My relationship. Reform, first of all, I make a distinction between the reform leaders. I'll use the term reform, because conservative is just a different definition. I'll use, the main problem is the reform. The individuals that belong to the synagogues that are raised in their schools and so on and so forth, they are not at fault. They're not at fault because they don't know any better. So they're not regarded as sinners. But we, in other words, the Orthodox Jews are obliged to try and reach out to them in a friendly way and to try and instruct, to try and teach them through persuasion. And there's we have no power of coercion today to teach them, at least to let them be exposed to what we consider to be the true ideas of Torah, the idea of the Torah as a divine system given by God, at least to them, let them make that choice. And I taught, by the way, I taught in Hebrew schools of conservative or reform. I made no distinction. And I treated the children with the same respect, and I made the same effort. And I understood the problems. I never tried to brainwash or propagandize because that doesn't work, but simply to educate, so they should have the possibility of making a choice. As far as the leaders are concerned, they are regarded as heretics and sinners because they are misleading. They are rebels. They are rebelling against the divinity of the Torah. And I say, if they were just rebelling against the divinity of the Torah, and they were honest about it, and started their own religion, that wouldn't be so bad. So start your own religion. I have much more respect for you. But don't call it Judaism. And of course, the reason for it is, the reason why they call it Judaism, and the reason why they're not honest and consistent, is for very practical purposes. Because there's no money. If you're going to start a different religion, which has nothing to do with Judaism, who's going to attend? Jews in America were searching. And Jews came to America, and they started to get wealthier, and they started to assimilate, so they didn't want to have strictly Orthodox ritual and synagogue and so on and so forth. So there was a market. It's a combination. There was a market for something which is more lenient and more palatable and so on and so forth. And these reforms came along, and they gave it the... They gave it the packaging, and they gave it the ideology, and they presented it like a philosophy. And no doubt there are some. I'm not saying that they're all phony. There's a lot of money involved, but there are no doubt there are many people who are sincere who believe it was the right thing to do. I'm not consuming the motive of every reform or sincerity. Rabbi. The real problem emerged, however, in one area, where the reform and the... You see, we could tolerate the reform. We could tolerate the conservatives. So we have... We believe it's divine, they don't. We'll have a struggle within the Jewish people, and we'll try and win them over. Yeah, this whole question then, this whole petition was circulated recently with the whole changing the amendment to the law of returns, the unity of the Jewish people, as though it was the Orthodox, as though it was the Orthodox who had suddenly threatened the unity of the Jewish people. But it's not the case. Who destroyed the unity of the Jewish people? For 3,500 years, the Jewish people were united because there was only one recognized method of conversion. Who decided to unilaterally abrogate this and to now bring in people into the fold and to change the matters of status? See, when it comes to matters of personal status, for example, divorces, this became a tremendous calamity because we do not recognize, for example, a reformed divorce. If a couple is married according to Jewish law, then they go to a reformed rabbi who does not follow the procedures of divorce. And these people don't know it. The people are innocent. They think it's a rabbi. They think they got a divorce. According to Jewish law, they are still married. This woman now goes ahead and marries another Jewish man. According to Jewish law, she's a married woman. Right? And the children that... You don't realize the dimensions of the calamity. All children that will come from that union are illegitimate children. Bastards. In the sense, they cannot marry into the Jewish community. They can only marry other mamzerim, and they can marry converts. That's the... it's not a bad... By the way, I don't mean it in a negative sense by mamzerim. Look, I'm speaking from a different perspective. When I use the term mamzer, I'm talking about a person's status. It's a status in Jewish law. It's not a pejorative term in Jewish law. When that happens, you're creating terribly destructive things. Now, the real problem came about in the last 30 years. Even with regard to conversion, it wasn't that expensive. They may have converted. Back in the early 1900s, the reform dropped the requirement for circumcision and conversion, which was always an absolute requirement. But, for example, this issue of patrilineal descent, everybody knows that according to Judaism, who determines the religion of the child? The mother. Matrilineal descent. That's the law of the Torah. In other words, if it's a Gentile father and a Jewish mother, the children are Jewish. It goes by the mother.
Mother converts to becoming a Gentile.
There's no such thing as a mother converting. In other words, that if the mother converts to Catholicism, it's an interesting point. If the mother converts to Catholicism, then she is a Jewish heretic. She is a Jewish heretic. But her status is a Jew, and her child is a Jew. A child does not have to be converted, because there was no breach. You can't break the line. The other way around, however, if it is a Jewish father and the mother is a Gentile, then that child is a Gentile. And in order for that child to be Jewish, that child would have to be converted. Matrilineal descent. Is there any question about that? The reform unilaterally came along and decided on patrilineal descent. In other words, as in the last 30 years, there's been a tremendous upsurge in intermarriage. And whereas it used to be viewed as a taboo, what's happened is it's become more and more accepted. Okay? So, the reform and the conservative, mainly the reform, more than the conservative, felt a tremendous problem here. They'd be losing numbers. They were worried about statistics. A loss, they perceived that there'd be a diminishing of the Jewish people, by the way, which is no consideration, that's not our problem, if there is or there isn't. And they began to institute new criteria. Now, I've started off by telling you what the true criteria for becoming a Jew is. From a Reform perspective, however, I'm just giving you the conclusion. It's a very good book here. It's called The Certain People by Charles Silverman. Gives you the whole history of what's been going on. From a Reform perspective, what matters is not the religious identity of the mother, see, but the way in which the child is raised. Quote, it can no longer be assumed a priori that the child of a Jewish mother will be Jewish any more than the child of a non-Jewish mother will not be. The Central Conference of American Rabbis declared in March 1983 in a resolution stating that the criteria for determining the religious identity of children of mixed marriages should be the same, whether the Jewish parent is the mother or the father. So not only did they now recognize patrilineal descent, you see, where there's a Jewish father and a Gentile mother, but now they abrogated the idea of matrilineal descent. In other words, it's not enough that the mother is Jewish. What is the criteria? Specifically, the conference declared the child of one Jewish parent is under the presumption of Jewish descent. This presumption of the Jewish status of the offspring of any mixed marriage is to be established through appropriate and timely public and formal acts of identification with the Jewish faith and people. These, quote, acts of identification, the rabbis went on to explain, will include entry into the covenant, circumcision, doesn't have to be, it could be, acquisition of a Hebrew name, Torah study, bar mitzvah, and confirmation. Which means to say like this.
If the 1,000 members say, if you have 1,000 other congregants in Israel, it's a vote to get certain people into the Knesset. That's how it all began. But for the hundreds of years before that, that question truly never arose about the conservative, about reform, about Jesus. It began, and it, in my opinion, it is strictly a political issue where the Orthodox want more power in the Knesset, and I think that is the only reason. I think this is a huge expression, a whole bunch of crap of what the Orthodox people have done. It is a disgrace. And I myself, I'm a total for that. There is a person who wants to become a Jew who is better than the gangsters like Meyer Lansky and these other Jewish gangsters, the Lefkins and the Buckholzers. We accept the gangsters as Jews, the criminals who are born Jews, as Jews, the people who are good people and want to become Jews, we won't accept. This I will never understand and I will never accept.
Okay, I heard you before. Now, one second. Okay, do you want to
answer that? No, you see, I respect for what you did, and I'll never question what you did, but I think what you did is what you actually should do. What I am questioning is, hundreds of years, it has never been brought to the public. It has never been brought up as a question until recently in the last election. That is the only time it has really ever come forth. I am not saying to become a Jew, you should go to the I'm not saying that you shouldn't study law and what that you should. You should know what it is to become a Jew. But what I am saying is, if not for this past election, this never would have come into effect for the religious party, and it was only the religious party, only the religious party, is the one who caused this problem. And what is going on in the world? Who is it here? Well, that's my opinion.
Okay, let me try. I'm going to try and give everybody a chance. There are other people that want to say something. I will get back to you. If Joe wants to say something, he has to leave. So,
I'd like to say something. I'm not proud that I'm not the religious side of the world, but if we lose what we had 5,000 years ago, and don't try to change the laws that were made for the Torah, then we don't deserve any laws that were made then. Because that's how all these other religions started, by man-made change laws. If you go by the law or you don't go by the law. That's the answer. I'm not the guy who goes that way, because I happen to be born Jewish, and I'm lucky that I was born that way, and I have a chance to go this way or that way. That's the easy way. From the beginning, if you remember, you got the laws, believe it or don't, and you go by that law, otherwise, Catholicism, it's all come down the line. It's all to be changed by men. So if you want to change it, we'll make the law.
And who made the law about going into a mixer? For God's sake, from the hell?
Read
all
the
right, everybody, if you're coming,
I don't know the answer.
Who said so? 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 Who said so three steps: acceptance of the commitment to Torah, circumcision, and immersion. Those are the three steps. And throughout all of
the
history,
biblical
laws, right. These are not man-made, and therefore they are not subject. They are not subject to change by men. But I just want to get back to this thing. I'll call up in front of Israel. And what the U.S. I don't mean, by the way, there's nothing in what I've said which would indicate that I agree with what Lubavitcher didn't say. The problem, if you want to believe that there's no problem over here, except because of this tumult in Israel, then you just are not aware of what's going on, Lenny. What's going on is a time bomb has been building up in America. The problem is not in Israel. The problem is that there are not that many people in Israel coming into Israel with this problem of conversion. Here are some of the facts. Interfaith anxiety. 1 in 3 American Jews marries a non-Jew, both men and women. There are 500,000 Jewish Christian couples in America today. There's more than 750,000 children. 750,000 children. You know what that means? These are children whose status is not clearly defined. And it's not the fault of these children. I know my friends that are today are practicing in Orthodox synagogues, and these children, a lot of them, and their parents were sincere. They married, they had a reformed conversion, they didn't know any better, they thought it was legitimate, and they belonged to temple. They raised their children in a nominal Jewish sense, their kids too, Hebrew school. A lot of times these kids became even more Orthodox and became observant, and they want to marry Orthodox fellows. Now they come to the rabbi to get married, and he starts doing an interview in the background. He finds out that there is conversion, the mother was converted. He has to look into it. He finds out there was a phony conversion. The conversion was not valid. This child over here was brought up thinking they're Jewish psychologically and wants to be Jewish and so on and so forth. But in point of fact, is not Jewish. In other words, you have 750,000 people of questionable religion. This is a tremendous tragedy for the Jewish people. What is going to be is going to be two people. If this thing is not clear now, there are solutions. There are solutions that can be effective because it's not too late for this person to convert in a proper way. You follow what I'm saying? Yes. But this is not always done. They don't always take that route. And it's not always the fault. See, in my opinion, it's not always the fault of the person who married or converted. They didn't know any better. They thought that what they gave many, many people who were converted in form. They didn't even realize at the time that the Orthodox wouldn't recognize, or the Jewish people wouldn't recognize at all. What is happening over here is a situation where you're going to have two different nations. Where the Reform and Conservatives can find themselves, not to keep cautious, this, that, so I don't follow their cashless or whatever it's next. When they began to go into this area and to bring in people wholesale with 6 easy steps and to entirely care, so they do. I just spoke to a woman in the hospital. You were there with me today. This woman in the hospital was getting converted. I was there with me today. We went to visit Charlie Morrow. She was telling me there's all this classes going on. She was telling me, and she didn't know I was going to talk to rabbi. I was asking in a very innocent way, why are you becoming Jewish? Because she married this guy. When did you start? In September. When are you going to be converted? Soon after, meet with the rabbi. It's a class. There's a class. They have a class once a week. And what do you have to do to be Jewish? Well, the rabbi emphasizes that we should belong to the temple and go to temple once a week. I said, are there any requirements? Are you committed? Do you have to? No. In other words, basically, if you declare you want to be a Jew, that's basically sufficient. Yeah, our rabbi doesn't demand much as long as you attend. The temple is the main thing. Because temple is what it's all about, if you understand the economics of the situation. Rich?
It seems to me, though, that one thing that you just said is that for people who don't, who are not that, who
You say what you're creating, though, is what you're doing. But then you're dividing the Jewish people into two camps. It's not just that, but there are many people that agree with them, and then there are many people that... What you're doing is you're creating two separate peoples. You are rupturing the unity of the Jewish people. Bobby?
I'm not wanting to defend your kids. There are consensus conversions that were done according to the Orthodox law that were done by a conservative rabbi. And they were using its Orthodox mystery as the last step.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Now, Rabbi Shearson is questioning the validity of those conversions and is saying to the Orthodox people, do not let the conservatives use your mystery.
Yes.
Now, is that right?
Yes. In my opinion, yes, I'll tell you why. I'm not even here with the Rabbi Shearson, by the way.
No, I question Rabbi Shearson.
You have to understand the reason behind it. It wouldn't just be Rabbi Shearson. I think it's only fair, though, to answer Lenny. I did really say that I would speak about the problem in Israel. The problem in Israel did not begin this past year. The problem has been a problem since the establishment of the state. The question would be, who would determine the issues of marriage, religious issues in Israel. This was, the rabbinate in Israel is completely Orthodox. The only recognized rabbinate is the Orthodox rabbinate. Now, the problem emerged, let me give you a brief history, with the question of the law of return and registration. Because, of course, in Israel you had this question. One can be registered, but is it for a person to be a citizen, it can be a Gentile and an Israeli citizen. Okay. But you do have nationality. On the registry card, it says nationality. So an issue arose in 1958. That was the first time they had the issue. If a person declares that he's of the Jewish nationality, he wants to identify with the Jewish people, even though he doesn't convert, can he be registered on his identity as a Jewish national? He's part of the Jewish nation. Even though religiously speaking, he didn't convert. It caused a whole turmoil in Israel, and the religious party left the government. Ben Gurion was prime minister at the time. He convened a gathering of greatest scholars, not just Orthodox, by the way, many Orthodox, but what he considered to be the leading Jewish scholars of the time, of all stripes. And he asked them for their opinion. In other words, the opinion was that in registry should be in line with halacha, with Jewish law requirements. So that law went back to effect. Now, what happened was that... there were some cases that came up. There was this lieutenant, Shalit. He was a Jew. He was in the Israeli army. He was married to a Gentile woman. And he wanted his children registered as Jews. But the children hadn't converted. So there was a whole big tumult whether they should register them as Jews or not register them as Jews. This led to the passing of the Who is a Jew law in 1970, I believe it was. And the law stated that... As far as Israelis are concerned, only those who are Jewish, from a Jewish mother or conversion, would be recognized as Jews. Jews coming from America, would be recognized as Jews if they were born Jews from a Jewish mother, or if they had converted. Now, when it said if they had converted, it didn't say how they had converted. It didn't say that the conversion had to be in accordance with Jewish law. In other words, that left the door open for any conversion. Now, that began, the 1970 began the battle, because according to the way the law was written, it would mean that the law of return and the rights of citizenship, etc., 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 would be given to anybody who could show that they were converted, be God by Reform or by Orthodox. Now, the big battle of the Orthodox, of Lubavitch, and all the parties has been to ascertain that Israel should only recognize conversions which are carried out according to Orthodox law. That's been the whole battle. Some question whether they should make a vow. I'll tell you what it is. In Israel today, then, a person comes, there aren't that many. They say it affects like, 20 people a year? 12 people? Much less. Hardly anybody in this category. Because very few of these people who are converted in Reform, right, or conservative, go to Israel. I'm not so sure why they chose to make such a big issue out of it. Well, what happened is then that a person who was converted according to Reform will go to Israel, and he will be registered, right, as a Jew. So it means in terms of nationality, he's regarded as a Jew. Now, what happens when this person, who regards himself as a Jew, now wants to marry, he's going out with Jewish girls, obviously. He regards himself as a Jew. He wants to marry an Israeli. Now, in Israel, you can only marry through the Rabbanut, which is Orthodox. So what's going to happen? They're not going to perform the marriage because he's not, they don't regard him as a Jew, unless he's willing to go through a Orthodox. That's right. So, in other words, like this, there was a split in the Orthodox community. There are those Lubavitch, for whatever reason, decided that the best way to go about this is to fight for an amendment to the law of return, that the law of return should specify that we'll only recognize as Jews those who are converted to halacha. There are others in the Orthodox community that said it doesn't pay to have a big battle over this. Let the situation go the way it is. These non-Orthodox converts will come to Israel. They'll be registered as Jews. When it comes time for them to get married, the Orthodox rabbinate will not marry them unless they go through a proper conversion. In other words, what you're creating is a split, a schizophrenic. In other words, he's a nationalist, he's a Jew, and religiously he's a Gentile. That's basically what you have. That's basically what you have with the current situation. The fight of the Lubavitch was to avoid that concept, that there's no such thing as a nationalistic Jew. Either you're a Jew completely by religion and by nationality, or you're not a Jew at all. That's basically what the fight was all about. Now, I don't know if it was the right thing, believe me, I may, to make such a political issue out of it, you see.
Well, a lot of people are upset about
it. Yes, all right, but I'll tell you the truth. That's a good question. I'll let you speak in a second, ladies. And, I'll talk to everybody a chance. Let me just finish up what I have to present. I don't agree with a lot of the tactics. The Orthodox parties in Israel have used the political democracy, they've used the political system, and like any, their motives are to maintain, to the greatest extent possible, separation of Judaism. Many of the ideas that they had, I don't agree with. Some of them might have been carried away with power. They were thinking of imposing Jewish law, closing down television on Friday night, etc. I have to disagree with that approach. I don't believe that we should, in this day and age, we can force Judaism down anybody's throat. I think the method is education and persuasion. But there are certain areas where there can't be any compromise. In other words, if a person is not keeping the Sabbath, right, I'm not going to use political sanction against that person. He's a Jew, and I'll try and win him over. But when it comes to a question of conversion, you see, and to do away with the divine, which I regard as a divine return, and to say that a person is not a Jew, he's a Jew, this is a matter of life and death. It's all fight to the death against that kind of thing. Maybe that wasn't the right method, though. I'm not saying I agree with you, Bobby. You follow? What I'm trying to bring out to you here today, and I know that I sent out the letter, I made it appear that we're going to talk about only the Israel thing. This is the real crisis. In Israel, you don't have that kind of a crisis. The real crisis is, and I know, but the crisis is that day in and day out, 750,000 Jews who are Jews are, do we know? It's a separate, you're creating two different nations. That's the disunity. And that rupture and that disunity was not created by Orthodoxy. What's Orthodoxy? Orthodoxy says, Orthodoxy says, this is the divine law, this is the way it's always been, and this is the way we should keep it. Let's keep it. Why not? When it comes to matters, listen. Well, you can have your own reform services. All right. You want to take down the Mechitza? Take down the Mechitza. We don't. No, because they don't accept the divinity of the law. I told you that. We don't accept the rabbis.
You
accept
them
as Jews, yes.
And you use the same book we use here. Right? The only difference is the way that temple was run from was that the women and men
sit together. The violation of the
law. No, I went to another show, which is a conservative show, and I had your side. But I
can't
get many of you.
Yeah.
And it comes to your side. How did you come to your side?
Okay.
And when I went to your side, I didn't talk to you about that. I looked at another one.
The
Sons of Israel. Now, they run a conservative service, and downstairs they run an Orthodox service.
Yeah. So which one did you go
to? I went to the Orthodox service. I said separately from the women. I sat over here, and the women sat on the other side of the that's where it was. But here was a conservative show,
right,
which ran conservative. And look, and how I found out about this was my dentist, who's very Orthodox.
Okay,
he told me about it
while
I went there.
The reason why, Bobby, I'll have to answer, the reason why you do not accept a conservative conversion
is because the conservative rabbi himself is not fit to perform a conversion since he does not uphold the divinity of the law. Once you break from the divinity of the law, then that would apply to me. That would apply to me or to anybody.
That he does feel that way.
No, he said, no, there's anything that I've read. That's openly stated views. Read about conservative, read their books. They themselves do not believe that the law is binding. They have the right to change, and that's conservative Judaism. There's no, listen, now, your thing about, I want a lady and a to go have a change. The thing about Hasidism. Hasidism is a new movement. He's right about that. And they've instituted a lot of things. They wear their kapotas and their black strandlock and this and all. I say like that. I don't believe in it. But when it comes to fidelity to Jewish law, they believe 1,000% in making kashrus, and they didn't uproot anything. They wanted to add more stringency. You see, they wanted to be more strict than the law required. That we should not mingle, we should have different clothing, you see, that we should wear the garb of the age. I say that's not necessary, that's not my, that's their philosophy. But they never disagreed with regard to the requirements of Jewish law. You see what I'm saying? They didn't abrogate, and there's no abrogation of Jewish law one iota. In fact, their whole point was to be more strict than the law required. So you can't say that their conversions aren't good. All right, Abe, and then Levi.
Something that I find out of this is that we are willing, from the conversations that are taking place among the extreme Orthodox, and I say it extreme advisedly because I think you know what I'm driving at. When the extreme Orthodox insist that the state be coordinated with Orthodox law and don't want to recognize that the state or refuse to recognize that the state is a separate entity, which allows for many different varieties of people to live within the country. We've got a problem. Because as was suggested before, there are people who are tending towards Judaism, be it Reformed, Orthodox, Conservative, they are tending towards it. Why can't we, in our religion, be it Orthodox, lean towards these people to bring them into the fold and train them and educate them and make them comfortable, rather than to separate that and therefore make it more difficult for that 750,000 people to become a part of us? Why must we do things in such a way that we make it uncomfortable or impossible for people to accept our way of life and agree to it and learn for it and become a part of it, rather than put all of these things in their place, in their way, so that they find it very difficult to belong?
I would say like this, though, but I think that you agree with me. I agree that we should do everything. The purpose of the Jewish people is to be a light, to attract people to our way of life. Now, we should not place the law against placing undue obstacles in the path. But if you mean to make it easier by watering down time-honored and divine requirements, that way we can't make it easier.
Let me put
we
it
cannot
in
make
way.
It easier, excuse me, if you mean by making it easier by saying, well, we don't really have to have a commitment to Judaism like we did in the past.
That's not what I said.
Okay,
what
that's, all I want you to know.
What I am saying,
are you in favor of maintaining the time-honored requirements for conversion?
Yes.
Okay.
But let me try to clarify it for you, okay? And I'm going to use a very strange logic. Man goes into the service. He's a recruit. He measures up. He becomes a PFC. He does better. He becomes a corporal. He does better. He becomes a sergeant. Why can't we do the same thing in our religion? You want to be a Jew? We accept you as wanting to be a Jew, but now measure up. And we will give you status on the basis of measuring up.
Did the reforms say measure up, or did they say 6 easy steps?
I agree with you, Rabbi.
Okay.
I'm not saying to accept reform, but what I'm saying is why must the Orthodox not accept the one who does want to be a Jew as an expression?
They've accepted, excuse me, they've accepted in Israel since the state
since the state has been created, there's a few thousand Jews, I don't know the exact figures, who have been accepted as legitimate converts in Israel, and there's converts to Orthodoxy in America today. Now, in other words, you may be right, the Orthodox themselves perhaps have to get together and organize themselves in a better way to present the Orthodox tradition so that people will understand it and be able to recognize it. And look, I'm not saying that the Orthodox rabbinate in America today, one second, I'm not saying the Orthodox rabbinate in America today is perfect and in harmony and is upright. I know that many people have gone through a runaround and they get around. I don't mean to absolve, we're human beings. And Orthodox rabbis are human beings, they make mistakes. And a lot of them have, imperfect motivations in many areas. No one's perfect. However, the way to fix the problem is not by abrogation of the Torah. It is rather by seeking means to make the Torah more accessible, more palatable, and so on and so forth, but that the genuineness must be retained at all costs. Otherwise, as I'm saying, if this would be allowed, wholesale conversions would be allowed, you're not going to have a Jewish people. The reason why the state of Israel, if the state of Israel were to now recognize all conversions, you will not have a state of the unity of the Jewish people as fragile as it is, I can assure you. If it wasn't for the hostility of the Arabs around them, they'd be fighting with each other day and night. Unfortunately, it's a tragedy, but that's the way it is. If this were to occur, you would have two different nations. Bear in mind that in history there was a point at which the Jews separated from Christians. The earliest Christians regarded themselves as Jews. The early Christians regarded themselves as Jews. And it wasn't only one they believed that Jesus was as the Messiah. It was before they even got this notion that Jesus was the deity, they split off. It came a point where the Jews said goodbye, you and I are no longer the same people. Now that is going to happen again. This doesn't stop. There's going to come a point in time. I want you, this point has to be made clear. It is not the Orthodox who've ruptured the unity. If everybody would have retained, in other words, everybody recognizes the Orthodox conversion. Reform recognizes it. Conservative recognizes it. Anyway, the question is, the conservative book. If you are a Reform person and you're dealing, let's say you're teaching Judaism. You see? If I was a Reform rabbi, let's say if I was a Reformer, for whatever reason, I can't conceive of why I would be a Reformer, but let's say I was. And I was teaching a person about Judaism, and they said, you know, I want to convert. I would tell this person, honestly speaking, that's not my field. Because if I convert you, you're going to have plenty of problems. Some Jews will recognize you, some Jews won't recognize you. Your children will have problems later on. They won't want to marry. They won't be Gentiles. They won't be Jews. They don't know what. Why don't you go to an Orthodox rabbi, get yourself a genuine conversion, and everybody will accept you. That will solve the problem. But there's one conversion that everybody can agree upon. All right, lady? Lady has been a bit ready. Lady is waiting a long time, patiently. Yes, that is a problem. Is so, no, I mean, you're right. I'm sorry.
It is true. I think that's the right thing.
Okay. personally?
In general.
I personally I don't do that much conversion. I'm not in that area. But, I don't have to. Statistics? Anybody here can help me out with statistics?
Statistics are why the people who are children or adults or whatever are going to conversion. Some of them go through it and then under the statute and then by the way. But they're so strong and they think they're in the first place. They want it.
Why is the premise here that we need to create hunger? That's something
yeah.
I'm missing.
No, you see,
oh, it's not fair to Joe, listen. I have to be fair. Was it like Abe? I have to be fair. I'll get free by later. Joe has been waiting patiently.
No,
and he deserves a chance. I had promised him that he would go there.
I just want to make an observation. As far as I'm concerned, the ultra-orthodox Jews and their leaders are in the same category with the top market students and the oil robbers.
Well, that could be. I mean, I told you what I'd like to respond to that. Presented today is not the position of the Babak of Hasidism. And you've heard my position on Hasidism. I'm pretty much anti-Hasidism in terms of my personal philosophy. Okay? And Abe had a good point before that I have to agree with you. That going beyond the law is also going away from the law. But practically speaking, however, they cannot be called heretics because they haven't given up these six participation commandments, in other words. They do conform 100% to the requirements of the law and conversion and so on and so forth. Now, as far as you see, Freddie, your point is, this is the whole motivation. If you read what motivates a Schindler and so on and so forth, it's like this, like there's a certain underlying premise that we have to bring people into the fold. There's a certain need to be. There is no underlying sentence in Judaism. I told you, God did not command us to go out and win over children. That's not part of our mission. Our mission is to win over the Jewish people to go. Let the Jewish people.
My work
is to win over the Jewish people. If in the course of doing so, if I give a class and it makes sense and a Gentile hears, I'm always friendly to them and I'm always nice and I'll spend plenty of time. I have have to have a Gentile that comes to my class with yeshiva.
I
don't pressure him. I don't pressure this person. I don't pressure him in any shape or form. The person listens in his own good time, if he's ready, if he's sincere. He understands. He recognizes that the people, Gentiles that have studied Judaism, recognize better than Jews. That is meaningless. I knew this person, by the way. He was doing work in the yeshiva one time. He's a Noachide. He's a Noachide. He was about, he's a man that became tremendously involved. He went to Christianity, he was mad, he was turned off, and he found Judaism. And he loved it. And he was involved, and he was studying and practicing, and he got his wife involved. They were both into it. They believed 100%. And they were with a rabbi. He was teaching, he loved the Shabbos and this and that, and they were really seriously thinking of conversion. When it came down to it, they went to the rabbi, and the rabbi, told them the requirements and so forth. He wanted to do 100%. His wife was reluctant. Not because she didn't believe, but he just felt that she couldn't keep hold. So the rabbi says, look, you don't have to convert. You're a good person in the eyes of God. Stay as a Noahide. He calls himself a Noahide. He keeps the seven Noahide laws, you see, and he tries to observe, he loves the Sabbath, he tries to observe the Sabbath in general terms, not specific, every specific. And he's a follower of God, in the eyes of God. He has a share in the world to come. He doesn't have to convert. All right, who's going to get the final word here?
The point is,
fighting for this for 20 years. This has been my whole approach with the Jews themselves to put out a hand and to go the extra mile and to try and win them back. That's been my approach.
100% non-Jews too, who want to convert.
Who want to convert? No problem. There's no problem.
Every person who was a non-Jew
who was sincere.
Referring to those who hold our law to everything. If
you
sincere?
Sincere. So there's no problem.
Sincere. 5 years later.
Yeah.
5 years later, for that. I'm not going to keep the Shabbos anymore.
Right.
And this is a converted Jew.
That's right.
I'm not going to keep the Shabbos. I'm going to ride on Shabbos. I'm going to go and have some pork. I never taste you. I haven't tasted it in years.
Okay.
You want to taste
it?
Now, what happens now to that person? Are they thrown out of the religion?
No. No, sir.
They're still Jews.
No, that's
okay. So then, if you want, anybody can do this. I'm going to obey the Lord. I'm going to go through all the Orthodox laws. And after I'm
you mean, a phony?
A phony? I'm just saying a phony. He does it. And a year later, he says, I run another.
That's why we have to be so strict in the first place to make sure that this doesn't happen. You can't guarantee it. It's happened.
How do I know that not one of us in this place
has
accused the expression of bastard? How do I know that one of our grandparents or great grandparents married a non Jewish woman?
Do you want me to find out?
Any one of us can be a bastard. And
listen,
none of us are Jews.
Listen.
Why are you with?
You think I'm
think of it. That's exactly what has been said.
Okay. The, you think that you're the first person that's asked this question?
I'm sure I'm not the
first. Listen.
But the way things are going, maybe you'll laugh.
I'll let you in a second here. Actually, I'm sure you have something very important to say. Well, Hector, no, Hector will speak next. I'm sure he has some enlightening things to say. How do you know is it very important? That's why... Jewish law is a very interesting thing. Jewish law has anticipated all these questions. Well, when people come to me to be married, we go through a long preliminary conference. That's why I wind up not performing that many marriages yesterday. I heard there are ways in which today, more than ever before, just, you know, 100 years ago, Jews came, you know, we knew they were Jewish more or less. And so today, with all these conversions going on, with all the divorces and so on and so forth, an investigation is made. Now, Jewish law determines how far you have to go back, because we can assume, we have a right to assume. I don't have any right to question you're raised as a Jew, you're born as a Jew. I have no right to question it, unless you come and you tell me that really you're not a born Jew, and your mother converted. Then I have a right to ask who converted her. But other than that, it's assumed. You have a certain status, an assumption that you're A, Jewish, and B, that you're not illegitimate. I have no right to pose the issue unless I have facts. But why? Because we go by majority. The majority of the Jewish people are not illegitimate. The majority of the Jewish people are Jewish, you see? As long as that's in effect, I don't have to worry that you are the result of a forbidden religion. I don't have to worry about that. In other words, today... No. Today, listen, the point is, though, that since today there was so much conversion going on, and people have been divorced, and maybe not properly, but I conduct a preliminary investigation, and I said, in other words, would you like to transfer? Have there been any conversions in your family? Have there been any divorces in your family? If you know one. If there's none, if there's conversions, I have to check it out. I have a right to do so. If there's been any divorce, like your parents, you're the child of the second marriage, I just want to have it confirmed that they would not a guest, if you would guess. And that's it. There's a fact, right. I had a case like that, and I had to go through a tremendous investigation. The people were upset. I was doing them a big favor. The people were upset because the parents wanted the question this night. Meanwhile, I was doing them a big favor because without this, they still do not marriage 20 years from now without service, maybe they would be suspected of possible illegitimacy. Okay? This is like a Morton Daddy's only.